If you're a fan of the paranormal world, then you'll love WLTK-DB Talk Radio. Talk shows bringing you the latest on everything paranormal, cryptozoological, metaphysical, true crime, psychic readings, and more. The truth is here and now on WLTK-DB Talk Radio at WLTKDB.com.
Do you want to do a real paranormal investigation of a well-documented haunted location? Here's your chance. Join our team as we continue the investigations of the Gaynor Tavern, currently Bean Stamper's Gentleman Club in Mackville, Wisconsin.
Originally built in 1877, the building was served as a general store, blacksmith shop, tavern, post office, dance hall, and bar. The building was originally built by Michael Gaynor and remained in the family for five generations before being sold to Bean Snappers in 1993. Throughout documented history, the building has been hit four times and burned twice, with four recorded deaths on the property.
Some of the most notable paranormal claims that we have documented are a male disembodied voice, a female disembodied voice, objects moving, doors opening and closing, lights turning on and off, knocking in response to questions, the sound of someone sitting down next to you on furniture, physical interactions including being touched, hair brushed, and scratched, and other unexplained responses through our equipment, which include a REM pod, EMF meter, and an obelisk.
Bring your own equipment, or we have some you can use while you're here. Audio and video recording is encouraged. Here is your chance to investigate the paranormal. For the very first timers to the experienced professionals, we can walk you through, or you can take the lead. The time is yours. Ask your questions and get your answers. Limited space is available for tours, so make sure you purchase your tickets in advance at wisconsincaps.com. Click on the Gaynor's Tavern link under Public Events. Welcome to the official Cryptids, Anomalies, and the Paranormal Society's podcast. I'm your host, Barnaby, and you're listening to Whispers from the Dark. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Whispers from the Dark. I'm your host, Barnaby. Today, we have a special show for you. When we do investigations and interviews, sometimes we record full-length interviews, and we do that so that if there's any part of that interview that we want to use for an episode of our show, we can snip out the things that we need and still have a lot more information. This is just one of those cases. As part of our UFO episode, we interviewed Dustin Shuda, and I had the opportunity to talk to him about some of his research as a ufologist and how he got started, his sighting, and his collection of UFO photographs. So today's show, you get to hear the full interview with Dustin. So without any further ado, I hope you enjoy this week's episode of Whispers from the Dark.
My name is Dustin Shuda, and I grew up in Madison, Wisconsin. Born and raised, I love it. I always been into sci-fi and UFOs since I was a kid, so the interest is always there until I had my own experience where it kind of like shifted my interest more into a hardcore hobby where I had my sighting. It was October 19, 2012. I was at my girlfriend's house right off Kendall Road, right behind Hoyt Park. It's a big park in Madison. And I was walking in my car, and this is right when the sun was about to go down, too. And right when I was coming up to the streets, I just happened to look up, and this giant silhouette of a boomerang with five dim lights, they were white lights, but it was like solid black. And it was about the size of a school bus, the length of it, and probably the width of it, too. of a school bus. It was about 15 or 20 feet above the treetops. And it was dead silence. And like, I was just like shook. My jaw was dropped. I was just like, the fact that it was dead silent, like, really rattled me. I was like, what the fuck was that? And it was probably going like 40 miles per hour. So I got a good clear look of what it was, you know, the shape of it. And like, the fact that it was dead silent was where it really wigged me out. Like, I stood there for a while, shook, and I was even debating going back to my girlfriend, just, you know, telling her what the fuck I saw. But, no, I just drove off. And then after that day, I kind of, like, dug deeper into the UFO field, just kind of researching other contactees and other researchers. And, yeah, just kind of just went deep into the UFO subject.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
So you weren't like researching, like you were into the UFO stuff and that prior to that, but not really into it until you actually had.
Exactly. I was interested, and especially when Ancient Aliens came out, I was always watching that every episode that came out, you know, and every one. But yeah, it's just yeah.
Cool. So yeah. We were going through some of the stuff you got around here in your room here. You call it the UFO Museum. Well, right. That was kind of cool, and it really is. I mean, like, you got all kinds of cool diagrams and pictures and books and artifacts and all the, what is it called? The, not the ambiance, the, where you follow all the lineage back. Like, you can prove that this was the actual photographs taken by, you know, the individual researchers and stuff.
Right.
Provenance? Whatever that is. Yeah. There you go. I knew I'd get a word out. Speaking is hard. But, yeah, that's really cool that, you know, like, you've worked so hard to, you know, get these and the autographs and stuff of the people that took the pictures.
I think it was half of his luck because these were on bids, too. So I was battling these other people who wanted these, too. But, yeah, no, I was lucky to score half of my collection from the storage locker of Colonel Wendell Stevens. And he's a famous UFO investigator from the 60s and 70s and worked 10 years with Billy Meyer in Switzerland. He's another famous contactee, very controversial contactee, where it kind of splits the UFO community in half with this guy because he thinks he's bogus photographs and videos, and the other half people believe that these are genuine. And there's even like researchers and other investigators and lost my train of thought here, I'm sorry. But no, other professionals who analyze the videos and, you know, say they're authentic. So yeah, it's just, I like the controversial part of it. I think the whole thing is, you know, so.
I think anything that you're talking about with UFOs and stuff is controversial. I mean, because you have so much unknown there. You know, even if we're not talking about like extraterrestrial interdimensional stuff, you're also looking at top secret stuff.
Yeah.
You know, in the news, you know, you have all these congressional hearings and stuff, and they said that one of the things they could release all this information, but they can't tell you the shape, and they can't tell you where it was taken, because that would, you know, blow the whole thing out of the water as to where they're looking and whose technology we know about, even if we don't know whose that is.
Yeah.
And that's, it makes sense, but it also severely limits what we know about. So you were telling me a little bit about these pictures back here, and for the people listening, I apologize, but if you can kind of maybe describe what these are, and you were talking about the plane in here was being tested at the time too, so it wasn't like common knowledge, right?
Right. So these are even more controversial at the time. That, yeah, they didn't talk about the F-117 until 1983, I think. But yeah, so the story goes that Billy Meyer and Askett is the extraterrestrial woman, and Wendell in 1969 time traveled to 1981 to take the pictures of the new test flight of this aircraft that's being tested. So Wendell jumped out, and they hopped up early. We're obviously in the air, so Billy Meyer and Askett were up there. And while this thing was just kind of checking this UFO out, and it dipped off before authorities and other people got there. Because this was near Groom Lake, near 51, Area 51. So yeah, I'm pretty sure Wendell would have got shot pretty quick if they stuck around too long. But yeah, I have 12 of the photographs. Michael Horn has the other copy of 9 he has. Me and Michael Horn had been corresponding ever since I got these photographs and put them online. And people in Figu in Switzerland, too, got wind of that I got these. And everybody's been contacting me. And but yeah, the fact that I've been emailing back and forth with Michael Horn and makes it even more real that, like, I have something even more authentic that, you know, another expert... Yeah, is all about that. And these are new, too. This Michael Horn just found them 2 years ago. So.
So, we were talking earlier also, like, you have the, you know, the photographic envelope that was digitized and stuff. Or not digitized, I'm sorry, but the, you go to the store. Back in the old days, you know, you buy photos, you have them developed and that. And,
yeah.
You know, for our younger
So listeners. I got all the sleeves here, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when we're talking about these pictures, do you have, I don't need to see them, but do you have the negatives for these?
I got some.
Okay.
Not all of them. No.
So, and like, then obviously you can see the UFO in those negatives.
Not, I have any negatives of these, unfortunately.
Okay.
Some other ones I do.
Okay.
Of his. But yeah. Unfortunately, I have no, they must, some of them must have got separated because how Michael Horn found them without finding the hole. Other copies, taking other copies with him, you know. I don't know.
So you have different ones than he has?
No, we have the same. We just have, he's got one copy and I have the other copy of the same.
Okay, like a double print.
Right.
Right, okay. The reason I bring that up is because a lot of these people, you know, like the skeptics and stuff out there say, well, in the modern day of photography and that, you have all digital cameras on your phone and everything. There's no negatives.
Right.
A lot of people don't even know what a negative is, you know, for younger people and stuff. When you originally took pictures, you have a roll of film, and it takes a picture of the negative of whatever the light is coming in, and it develops it by turning the negative into a positive, and you get these photos.
Right.
And modern day, when you just have a digital photo, you don't have that. You just have this photograph, which can be manipulated, changed, edited, added to.
Right.
That was a lot more difficult, more almost, you know, impossible to get a nice, clear, clean negative and edit it. So to say that you have negatives for a lot of these UFO pictures is, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, it says, you know, like, maybe we don't know what these are even then, but it definitely was something in the sky that people were getting pictures of.
Yeah. And again, I'm, like, super lucky. And I did spend a lot of money to win some of these, so... very blessed. And yeah, the fact that I'm sharing it with everybody else, that these have been sitting in the locker for the last 10 years, you know, since he died. He had a associate that was paying off his storage locker fees until he recently died, and then that's why everything started getting auctioned off, all those boxes. That's why I got an opportunity to get into that, buy some of those. So yeah,
that's awesome. Really cool. That's really cool. What was I gonna say? So now, he has other pictures, right, that you've gotten. So, like, in those pictures, like, you have more, like, objects and stuff like that. Like, these right here, we're looking at some of these back here, and you can see, like, a bird.
That's an airplane, actually.
Oh, is it? Okay.
It's a jet.
That shows how good I am looking at pictures.
That's right.
That's there's right. A bird here? No.
No, like, exactly. I like to actually see the object move in a series of pictures. I have a series of pictures where you actually see the object moving. That's what even makes it cooler than just having this one picture of a UFO. It's just like, okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's been taken on accident, you know. You don't really purposely take a picture of a UFO. It just happens to be in the picture when you take it. But no, I have some with airplanes chasing UFOs. I have some more of these.
Well, that's really cool, though, because, like, it shows, you know, I was going to say if that was a bird, but, I mean, even better if it's an airplane, because you can see the comparison in the size, the shape, and say, well, that is an airplane. This is not.
Right.
You know? So what are your thoughts on the whole congressional stuff that's going on right now?
With disclosure? And all?
Yeah.
Yeah, Daniel's baby, just the timing, too, is so weird, too. The fact of the pandemic and all this other conflicts and politics and I liked how it's still being dripped. I think it's like people like us that have to keep pushing the stuff, you know, and making people's minds up, or having people making their own minds up of what's really going on. But I think the government is starting to slowly drip that information, and it's just maybe the hardcore religious folk are the ones going to have a hard time with it, you know? I don't know.
So you've been studying UFOs for quite a while now and stuff. Yeah. What do you think? There's a couple different theories, you know, like obviously what they are, where they come from, and that. Do you feel that like the majority of the stuff that you've seen, researched, investigated, and that, do you feel that that's extraterrestrial, come from another planet, or do you think it's interdimensional, that comes from a different plane?
That's awesome you said that. I always like to look at Earth like Disneyland of the galaxy, you know, like there's just so much going on. I think it's both, you know, like I think there's been civilizations that are out there in space that are billions and billions of years older than us, have been traveling the stars as we have been, you know. And yeah, like if we found something here, they probably would put a beacon here on the bottom of the ocean saying, hey, there's something you can study and observate. And I don't know, just and yeah, the interdimensional stuff too. It's just there's people having these spirituality experiences that are just so out of this world too, or these more like entities instead of like aliens and stuff like that. Yeah, I feel like we're just in a mix of like Disneyland, you know, like all these creatures, like, you know, even Bigfoot, you know, even his, I mean, there's even theories of links to the UFOs with Bigfoot too, or people spy the lights in the sky right before they had the sightings of Bigfoot, or vice versa, or a guy I heard took a shot at Bigfoot and disappeared, like, who knows, that's almost like interdimensional creatures who are fine. Even like, I don't know if you go to Burlington, Wisconsin, where they talk about the vortexes and stuff like that, and like, that's pretty wild, where you can take pictures, and your pictures are all wigged out and stuff like that. That's pretty gnarly. And yeah, these wormholes, who knows, like, that's why I'm like, it's gotta be more of this life than what it is, what we're presented, you know what I'm saying? And there's just too many sightings to kind of like say, let's make that shit up, you know? Or just, I don't know. Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny that you bring up Burlington. We actually did, that's cool. How CAP started.
Oh, really?
We started investigating the Burlington Woods and the Burlington.
There was a cafe there, didn't it? Mary
Sutherland, yeah. Yes. She's in our first episode.
All right, sweet. Okay.
And she's been on our podcast. So.
Okay, cool. Because, yeah. You know, I followed her once I started getting heavily into only Wisconsin stuff. Like, what I could find it with UFOs and stuff like that. But she was one of the top. And Frank Joseph, too. Another guy, I have a few of his books that she worked side by side with a few times. Investigating some of the sunken pyramids at Rock Lake. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've been out there. And,
I haven't, but I'm aware of them, yeah.
Yeah. And then there's, nearby that is the land pyramids of Aztalan. Have you ever been out there yet?
We have.
Yeah.
We have an episode coming out soon about that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. That place is super mysterious, too.
Yes.
And I call them, even the Native Americans there, you know, saw some strangers come from a distance and kind of set up shop and built this giant wall and cannibalism and elongated skulls they found there and giant bones and shit. And yeah, there's something going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with Cahokia Mound as well?
No. Where is that?
That's down in by St. Louis.
Oh, okay. No, I know.
It's pretty much the only pyramid in the United States that's a giant earthen pyramid.
Oh, cool.
So that's pretty cool. Yeah.
Is that some connection with Aztalan?
They believe. It has the same kind of theory as to the tribe that was there just disappeared without trace.
Oh.
They just gone.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Everybody just dropped everything. And the abundance of food and having that river that's like right behind their little town they had going.
I believe Mary Sutherland spoke about Cahokia and Aztalan and believed that those are actually the Aztec people. that they originally were up here and that they moved. And I'm sure, like, if I'm wrong, you know, somebody will correct me. But I'm pretty sure when we were speaking with her for our Burlington episode, she had brought that up.
Oh, so. That's so cool.
But this is a theory.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I heard the two, like, follow the corn, where, like, the corn started growing here from the north, and then it made its way south. So it even get started here even before going down and setting up shop down in Central and South America there. Yeah, I just love this. There's just so much mystery in Wisconsin. It's just mind-boggling. Even people who are out of town are like, damn, I didn't really know that, you know.
When we started CAPS and stuff, I always wanted to investigate Bigfoot and stuff, and I'm like, oh, no, that's just, the Pacific Northwest, you know. And then I started going, oh, there's some in Wisconsin, and then there's Dogman, and there's vampires, and there's UFOs, and there's the UFO capital of, the world, and wait a minute, what? And just the list goes on and on. The more you dig into Wisconsin, weird it is. And even more, like, every state. It's not just Wisconsin. Like, you think your state is normal, you're not listening to what's going on in that state. I mean, I've been doing a lot of research into Kentucky and Kentucky and Tennessee areas.
Oh, really?
And there's just amazing stuff. Like, Kentucky has the Ozark Howlers, which are these, like, dogs with antlers. And I actually interviewed somebody that saw one of these things.
Oh, wow.
And he's like, I have no idea what this is. I saw this dog cross the road. It wasn't a deer. It was a dog. It had antlers. Do you guys know what this is? And we're like, no. And we looked into it, and it's an Ozark Howler. Wow. Like, this guy had no idea anything about it, obviously, because he's asking us what it is. And turns out there's a lot of people that see this thing. So, if you want proof that somebody saw something, when they... I don't know what I saw, but this is what it looked like. Oh, yeah, that's a thing.
Hey.
So,
oh, that's interesting, dude.
Yeah. Oh, have you gotten into any of... I think it's Mike Clellan and the visitors and stuff, the owl theories that he has with UFOs? I would look into him. Okay. I was going to ask you about... But so he believes that, like, when you see... these giant owls, right? Like, a lot of people are, like, driving down the road and they see these owls standing next to the road or something, and it's a screen memory of an extraterrestrial being.
Huh.
So, yeah, something to look into, I guess.
That's
on to the next topic.
Yeah.
So, we talked about some of these and that. Like, what have you researched for Wisconsin?
Like I said, I've gone to Aztlan, and another one I like to go to is the Man Mound in Baraboo. You ever been there?
Nope.
Awesome. It's this giant humanoid, looks like an astronaut to me. And it's, like, meant to be seen from the sky as a mound, but it's gigantic. And it's just one of the last of the four, there's actually four of them, got destroyed back in the early 1900s when they were making roads and stuff. And actually, this one is actually, you see its legs have been cut off because of the road and realizing it was a mound. But, yeah, I like to go there because they even talk about, the Native Americans talk about these gods that are coming down, these powerful gods. And, like, what powerful gods, And you're obviously trying to reach out to them by having them seen from above, right? So that one kind of, like, strikes hard with me that, like, especially this thing has a big bulbous head and it's, like, wearing this bulky suit thing. That's awesome. Especially when the Native Americans are talking about it being a powerful god. And it kind of links the stories to the living cargo cults that are still existing today. And especially the ones in deep in the jungles of Brazil. There's the Kayapo Indians who they do a yearly dance where they dress up this guy in a straw costume. If it's like an astronaut suit and he has this long stick and it's his weapon as a stick. And then in their songs and poetry that they sing about this creature that came from the mountains from fire and smoke from the sky, and it came into their village and it didn't say anything. And then the brave natives that were ready to fight this thing, threw their weapons at it and it turned into dust. And he never pointed his weapon at the people, but he wanted to show his strength, and he pointed his stick thing at a tree and it exploded and shit like that, and it amazed the people, it scared the people, and it stood and it's in the middle of their tribe, and then the people who were brave enough, like, offered food to it and stuff, and then the next day it spoke in their language, And the other ones are like curious enough to ask him, like, how do you know our language? And like, well, I had to learn it the first night. And then they see through his helmet thing that he's had like a white skin with a beard and shit. And he ended up taking a wife out of their tribe and stayed with the tribe for years. And then went back into the mountain and blasted off into the sky. But he left his teachings of mathematics, agriculture, and he left a school behind that's still in existence today. Bep Kuroti is his name. It's like, in their language, like the most powerful teacher god. But the fact that, like, that sounds so extraterrestrial to me. And the fact that, like, these people carry out telling the story and dressing up like him as the cargo cult. And even the cargo cults, even earlier after World War II, you know, were setting up shops in those indigenous islands with people who were still living in the Stone Age, basically. And we're landing there with airplanes, and people were in the bush, like, what the fuck is this, you know? People were coming with, like, food they had to hunt for, and medicine, and other stuff. They're just so blown away that the gods can only possess something like this and fly out into the sky. So when after the Americans left after the war, these natives started building runways out of the jungle and making bamboo airplane fetishes out of straw and sticks and shit. And they would wait on these on the side of the runways, trying to entice the next airplane to fly by, to land on their landing strip and give them stuff. So it's kind of like, again, with that ancient cargo cult, the same things happening with just repeating the teaching and the kind of the religion of, like, this thing came down and we're celebrating every year, dressing up and telling the stories and stuff like that. And the fact that this still happens today and they still exist today, there's 150 cargo cults. I like to bring the cargo. Even Wisconsin has its cargo cult with the three cities that claim to be the capital, UFO capital of the world, right? There's Dundee and Belleville and Elmwood. Those are cargo cult cities where something, so much is happening in that sky over that town where enough eyes are on it. And people are like, yo, we're celebrating this. Or even, like, I think back in the 80s, Elmwood was thinking about building a $50 million runway for extraterrestrials, right? To entice them, kind of like Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Or, you know, yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is, I'm familiar with the runways thing that you were talking about, but the whole like religion part of that, I haven't heard that before, so.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, you know, you're talking about, like, all these, you know, cultures, the primitive cultures and stuff that are, you know, seeing these things come out of the sky and worshiping, like, gods and that. And, you know, when you're looking at different things, like, even, like, for me, like, cryptozoology and stuff, like, when these tribes, they're out in the woods, you know, or the Amazon or Egypt or wherever it is, wherever have you, and they know, I mean, they have to stay alive. They know every animal, what's right. edible, what's yeah. not edible, what's going to eat them, what they can hunt. I mean, they may not have the same name for it. They might not know, you know, whatever. But they know what these things are. So when they see, you know, Mokele Mbembe, the giant dinosaur of the Congo.
Yeah, I love that story.
When they see pterosaurs or flying pteranodon creatures or UFOs or extraterrestrial beings coming from the sky, and these ancient astronauts, you know, with the helmets and stuff, they didn't have internet. They didn't have, you know, people telling them that, you know, this thing isn't what you think it is, whatever. They don't know. No. They depicted what they saw.
Exactly.
You know, so, I mean,
even the cave drawings, too. Like, they're very good at drawing a buffalo, and then right on the side of that is this alien creature that's coming from the sky. It's like, well, come on. Like, just some people need credit, you know? Not that stupid. Yeah. No, and even to building the pyramids and other megalithic structures all around the world that they were just... You look at their toolbox and it was like a dental floss and toothpaste, you know? Like with the, really, nothing really to to really, you'd think to move massive stone. So like, especially the stuff at Baalbek too, like, my God, what healthy slave are you whipping on the back? To drag, especially these, yeah. They're mining, quarrying these rocks, some of them 80 miles away, across rivers, up and down hills. I mean, you look at today, moving a little, you think it's a tiny block, it takes a giant machine, you know, just to move just a few feet. You know, it just makes you wonder what the hell is going on. Or the technology that was just given to them, but just kind of like, you know, was watched at the same time that we're taking these right back, you know, right when we're done. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, it's not unfeasible that humanity or humans could have built the pyramids and stuff.
Right, and I say
we've shown that right. You can, you know, use logs and stuff and move all these rocks.
Right.
It's, you know, and I'm not saying that humans did it or aliens, or it doesn't matter. Humanity as a race has gotten a lot softer and smaller, right. You know, and it's just because we don't need to be those foragers, those hunters, those protectors and stuff that we did back in, you know, ancient times or, you know,
right.
Egyptian times or whatever. But still, there are things in there that don't make sense. You know,
right.
Like we said, you know, the cave drawings and stuff, they're still seeing these. So do you think that, you know, we were talking about portals and alternate, you know, dimensions and stuff. Do you think that what these things were, what these people back then were seeing were actual extraterrestrial races? And some of them probably were. Or is it possible that, like, some of this was modern day stuff that somehow time traveled?
That's a good theory too. I heard both theories. Yeah. And again, with these photographs that are very controversial about time traveling, again, that's feasible too, that some of these do, you know. I like both theories.
well articulated. Good job.
Sorry. I don't know.
But I mean, like, you know, things like Amelia Earhart or all these, you know, and I think they finally maybe did find Amelia or think they know where she went. But, you
mm-hmm.
know, for you know, reference or whatever, you know, the Bermuda Triangle,
yes.
The Alaskan Triangle, the
Golden Triangle.
Yeah.
China.
All these places of weird disturbances of electromagnetic fields and distortions.
That's
and
what
stuff.
Burlington had their kind of like little triangle,
mm-hmm.
you know, in that sense. There's so much weird stuff being there. And the pyramids, I heard. You ever seen the pyramids of Burlington? From like some old, I think Mary Sullivan had some pictures. But yeah, there's some old pictures from like 1900s of the old mountains that look like pyramids. Yeah. But yeah, again, like we're seeing the pyramids everywhere, almost every continent. And the race of giants that was found in Lake Dullivan, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I have some two kids that went into a cave and.
I'm not familiar, but yeah, I know there's
right.
Like
I think 18 fully wrecked mm-hmm. skeletons are like 9-10 feet tall.
There's a lot of that in the Red Haired Giants and stuff.
Yeah, she wrote a book, I think.
Yep,
yeah.
Mary Sullivan did, yeah. And they're all from, you know, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan area, Ohio, these race of giants and stuff. And there's what's really fascinating is there's newspaper articles documenting this, that they were found, they were discovered, they were dug up, it was documented, they were given to the Smithsonian, and that never happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've always wondered that, you know, and it's like, I mean, I've heard stories that they took them out into the ocean and dumped them, or, you know, they're in the basement of the Smithsonian or something, but they don't talk about
it. They didn't have it on display for a little bit until people started really wigging out, and they took it off display.
I did hear that as well.
Okay.
There is one skeleton of a giant still on display.
Oh,
not at the Smithsonian. I'm trying to think what museum, because I've dug into this with the red-haired giants and stuff.
Sure.
And I can't remember if it's like Argentina. It's either South America or England.
Yeah.
One of those two areas, or not England, but Europe. Somewhere in Europe or somewhere in like South America has it.
Okay.
But there's a natural history museum that still has a 10-foot humanoid skeleton on display.
I would love to see that.
Yeah, I know.
Nice.
But it's way out in the middle of somewhere. I can't remember where it is. But you can look it up. It's,
yeah.
It's fully able to do. But yeah, so you've been doing a lot of UFO stuff. I mean, like, I found you through, you know, your work online and some of the pictures that you shared and stuff. So obviously, I assume other people have contacted you and stuff. What stories have you heard of people from Wisconsin here that have had encounters?
Let's see. Besides that one, I get flooded with people sending me photographs and videos of lights in the sky and even a creature that ran across the road. Let's see. Besides the old story, of Mark Coltrane.
Yeah.
It's a famous case where Colonel Wendell Stevens went and actually investigated the case in Colfax, Wisconsin, and it's a police officer named Mark Coltrane. And he was out on duty one day outside of Colfax, and he was sitting in his car listening to the radio, eating lunch, and then he noticed this metallic thing in the sky zigzagging towards him. He thought it was really interesting, so he had happened to have his camera right beside of him and hopped out of the car and was trying to take a series of photographs of it while it was zigzagging. It was hard. Some of them you can kind of see where you can see it. It's kind of, I'll show you. But yeah, so he investigated that case and went to the area where he had his sighting and a series of photographs. That he gave to Wendell. Other than that, another big case. Eagle River. The guy, Joe. There's so many names for these people here. I only know his first name. It starts with the S. But the guy who had his encounter where this UFO landing on his property and this hatch opened up and this little man, about 5 foot tall, asked him, or held up an empty jug of water, and he walked out, and he's like, the guy, extraterrestrial, indicated like he was thirsty, and he went down and got some water for this extraterrestrial, and in exchange for water, these extraterrestrials gave him some pancake type things, and the guy even took a bite, one of them, and said it tasted like cardboard, and he's just funny that he thought these guys were living off this type of food if they're, no wonder why they were small. But anyways, after that encounter, he had those pancakes analyzed by scientists and found out that they were regular buckwheat pancakes, but didn't have any trace of salt in it. So the fact that everything on Earth has a trace of salt, we have salt in us, trees and the ocean, made him out of this world, basically, that this planet, or at least where these people came from, did not have salt on their planet. So that's one theory why they were out of this world. Or you can think about how communion started, right?
That's true.
If aliens are giving us water for little wafers, makes me wonder what the hell that's all about.
There's no salt in communion wafers.
Is there?
I don't know. I know they're unleavened. Isn't that, that's the
I just thought everything, bread, I think everything has a trace of salt in it because it's an ocean-based planet here.
That's interesting. I was familiar with the pancake story. I wasn't familiar with the salt, though.
Because there's actually an Ancient Aliens, you can find it. They have a whole episode of that little story that was taken out. I learned it was only buckwheat pancakes myself until I heard the news. And that's when I even said it had its connections maybe with communion.
That's a good point. You don't know this yet because I don't know when this episode's going to air, but in the episode that we're filming right now, I actually have Chad Lewis telling that exact story.
Oh, cool.
About the pancakes and stuff. He didn't get as far as the salt, though. So, okay. But that's interesting.
Yeah, tell him to look up Ancient Aliens.
Okay.
They have a little clip of his story and then what they found in the pancakes. Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, we went up to Dundee Mountain a little while ago.
I love that place,
too. And we spent some time up there looking. Have you ever been there looking for aliens?
I have, yeah. I went up there. It's beautiful, too.
Mm-hmm.
Little trails up to the top there. And how that They claim that how it was created by glaciers and moving rocks under a river or underneath the glacier. There's a river and stuff, and rocks were being built up. But yeah, and then even the Native Americans call it Spirit Hill. And it's been obviously some phenomenon going on for thousands of years. If the Native Americans were naming it that.
Yeah. Cool. You ever see anything up there?
I haven't, no.
No, we didn't.
But the fact that they have a campground right below it, I want to go there and camp out and cross my fingers one day. And
sounds good.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, like, you've done all this stuff. Like, we talked about how you got into it and that. Like, what was some of the first things that you researched, like, when you got into this?
I started, ancient astronauts, mainly. I got into that subject. I read a lot of Eric von Däniken's books, Chariots of the Gods. Who else? All those ancient alien guys I follow and read their books. I was always kind of on the quest of where we came from in general, like where the human race came from. Cause this, all this religion stuff never made sense to me. And like, once ancient astronaut theory was brought to me, it made it so much sense. It was just like, yes, I can vibe with this so much. Not as like a religious type of thing, but like make more of a sense and more comfort almost. Like that, yeah. Instead of like just kind of like thrown into like all these other theories through religion and stuff like that didn't like sit well with me. And my family has been really supportive and actually have been kind of getting into it themselves, like wanting to watch some of this stuff with me and like, and then they have their own, not saying they had their own experiences, but they had friends tell them they seen UFOs and stuff like that. So it's kind of like more of an eye-opener, like stuff is really happening. And especially now, the slow disclosure and stuff, you see it more in the news and like that. And yeah, like how it's just sparking everyone's curiosity as much as it had sparked mine and having my own personal sighting where it's just kind of like almost confirmed, like that's it. Especially when it, like, I felt so scared almost, like hair is raised. And the fact that it was so dead silent, I was like, what the fuck? And yeah, then I was just off on the quest of who the hell are we, what are we here? And I have this drive of, I collect not just UFO stuff, I have stuff from World War II, and I collect tattoos. I collect everything I can get my hands on, so yeah.
I lost my train of thought. It was there.
That's all good. That's why you can edit these videos.
That was totally gone there. There was a thought, and I had the whole while you were talking, I'm like, I gotta answer, I gotta answer.
Well,
and then
good.
As soon as you stopped talking, my mind went, nope, it's gone. That's gone.
Well, I was very impressed that you didn't have like a little script of questions. You just had you're right off the.
Oh, I'm good.
Right,
yeah, I've done enough podcasts that I'm. That's what I was going to ask you. Good, we're back here. So, a while ago on my podcast, I actually interviewed a group called the Raelians Movement.
Oh, I never heard.
Okay, so the Raelians are a group of, it's their religion.
Oh.
They believe in extraterrestrials as their gods and stuff.
Oh, I never heard.
I was wondering if you'd looked into that.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually a church down in Chicago.
Really?
And we went to a paranormal event, and maybe you're interested as well. Go back, and it's a... I believe it's already aired, the episode, right now when we're recording this. But by the time you listen to this episode, it'll already be out. But
cool.
It should already be on our Whispers from the Dark podcast.
I'll watch it tonight.
Listen.
Sorry. I'll listen tonight.
There you go.
Sorry.
Yeah, it was really interesting listening to the guys talk about it and stuff. And
cool.
It was a really cool religion, but it was based all off of just the aliens and stuff and their god instead of that. Which is really interesting. Like, you were talking about, you know, these things are all over the world, you know, and these same stories, you know, you look at, if you break down any of the religions, any of the theories, mythologies, and all that from, you know, Greek mythology, Roman mythology, the Bible, Chinese mythology, and all this, they all have a lot of very, very, very similar stories.
Yes.
Yeah. To the point where, you know, if they're not the exact same and just translated different, it'd be very interesting. So why do you have an entire planet that all hears these same stories and they're scattered around the world? They don't have the same languages. Mm-hmm. They don't have any, like, in some cases, they're not even connected by land.
Yeah.
So it's not like somebody walked over and told them. Why, and pyramids, you know, we were talking about that too. Every major continent on Earth has a series of very similar pyramid structures, henge structures. I mean, even down, we were talking about Aztlán and
the mountains too.
Cahokia.
Right? Yeah.
Cahokia has a wood henge right next to it, which are these big cabers, big telephone poles. And they're stuck in the ground in a big circle, like a Stonehenge, like a big calendar.
Okay.
And they're like, well, we don't know what this is, but it's very similar structure, design, and stuff of that, of like Stonehenge and that.
That's funny. There's actually another little Stonehenge. Have you ever heard of Missouri Hill?
Mm-mm.
It's another place near Lake Mills. It's like about 8 miles away. Little Stonehenge of a 6-foot monolith sitting in a circle. And Frank Joseph, I think Mary has been out there too, and investigated and took pictures of the rock circles. But yeah, the fact that ancient men are erecting these big ass boulders and circles, you know, makes you wonder what how they were doing. And yeah, no, you're exactly right with the theories of all religions are talking about the same story, especially. And it's funny, like, I love the Tower of Babel story. You ever heard of that one?
Mm.
In the Bible, they were talking about God had this human emotion of jealousy when he saw that his creation was making this tower to his palace in the clouds. And, so, and he's like, you guys are thinking too quick and too much technology, or too quick. And he's like, one night I'm going to have them all speaking all different languages and hating each other. Next night, everybody get ready to work on this building. Everybody didn't notice. Everybody speaking different languages. Everybody was getting pissed at each other. Fights and broke out. Tower got abandoned, and people spread out throughout the world. That's just another extraterrestrial way of looking at it. Like, why would God have such a human emotion like that? Especially in a creation of something that's building a tower to you, man, in the sky. And especially with all these religious books, they always talk about the gods in vehicles, you know, in India, with the Vimana, and the flying chariots in the Bible, and all these other books, the flying birds, and the thunderbirds, and Native Americans, and the star people, and yeah, no, it's endless. The Kachina, oh my God. There's just so much. I love it. But it's just, again, this Tower of Babel, where it's just, maybe it was kind of planted in us, to kind of this work against, even in this field, like in any field, like there's this, it's always this yin and yang of going, you know, we want to do something, but there's something always coming around the corner to say, nah. I don't know. It's just a weird,
Yeah, I always thought that was weird that, like, you know, if God is this, you know, great being or whatever, why is he such a jerk?
Right.
Like, if you read the, you know, I'll be honest, I haven't read the entire Bible.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have time to read. I listen to books on tape and stuff like that. So, I got through most of the original Old Testament. And he starts out, you know, like, you know, you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this. And he's very, you know, not a very nice person, I don't believe, you know, but all these people worship and stuff. Well, they don't worship them; they fear him, you know. And I just never understood that. But
no, I agree.
Yeah, it just doesn't make a lot of sense, you know. But that's religion. So I'm not religious. I believe that, you know, like I believe in a higher power. I don't know what it is, but I believe that there's something beyond where we are. I mean, I wouldn't be doing, you know, UFOs or paranormal or anything like that if there wasn't something else. I mean, there's obviously a lot out there.
Right. You're on the quest of something. There's something more to this. And then there's other evidence showing that there are more to this.
Oh, definitely.
Life, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Whatever it is, I don't know. But I want to ask you, so a lot of these times, or maybe not, in your experience, how many times have you seen, like, radioactive stuff associated with sightings?
Again, I don't have, like, an instrument to read radiation in any of these sites. But, yeah, I don't know.
But just in, like, some of the stories and stuff that you've heard. Mm-hmm. Like, I know I've heard a couple, and I just wanted to know, like, do you hear, like...
I haven't personally.
None?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Please enlighten me.
I was just like, a lot of these, you know, like the UFO, I believe it's the Sun, just got a lot of declassified information about radiation burns and stuff in contactees and weird pregnancies and stuff of contactees and stuff. But these documents haven't been made completely public yet. They were declassified and released through the Freedom of Information Act. And maybe by the time this episode airs, that, you know, this will be more out there, but right now this is the end of July 2020 that we're recording this for, you know, the episode coming out. But I'm working on this theory because, you know, like we were talking about interdimensional and that,
right?
And these things, you know, if you look at the visual light spectrum, right? So you have this entire spectrum of wavelengths. You have the lower big waves down at the one end that are you know, television radio waves.
You can only see at a certain frequency, like,
yep.
And X-rays to... I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So you're getting into the visual light spectrum, and you start at the infrared or the red lights, and then it goes up from there through, you know, red, green, blue, indigo, and violet up to there. And then from violet, you go into the ultraviolet or the black light spectrum and stuff. After that, you get into the radiation, the gamma, the X-rays and stuff.
Right.
Right. So when people are seeing these crafts that just disappear into thin air... You're also getting these things where, you know, the people that are seeing these up close and personal are flying over their vehicles or landing in a field and leaving these places where, you know, no crops will grow or anything. If you're getting this radiation with that, is that possibly mean that these beings or these crafts or whatever they are coming from a different frequency or another dimension and dropping their frequency down into our visual spectrum, that they're there the whole time, but you're only able to see them now because they've dropped from the radioactive spectrum down into our visual spectrum.
It's funny that you said that, because Billy Meyer talks about that, how they only see in a certain frequency where they do drop in, where you can see them, even only, like, straight on. Like, if someone was on the, like, the right side of it, they can't see it, you know what I'm saying? Or, like, then if right below it, can't see it, you know, or above it, just if it's only straight on, like, again, it's just talking about the frequency of visual frequency.
That's interesting as well, because if you are familiar with any of the original, like, Skinwalker Ranch stuff, when, like, the Bigelow era and stuff, they were talking about how these portals and craft and stuff that they were seeing in the sky, if you were outside the ranch, you couldn't see it. So they were seeing all this stuff on the ranch.
Right
there, and then you drive outside the gates of the ranch, down the road or something, and nobody else could see what they were seeing. Which is another right there is what you're talking about, of seeing it straight on or from an angle or something. You're only seeing it from that spectrum.
Right.
It's also possible why certain people see things, yet the person with them can't.
Right. And who knew? Like, who knew that thing could have saw the UFO in the sky? Whatever frequency that, you know, it was being shown at the time. I don't know. You're right. It's amazing.
That's definitely neat that, you know, I don't know if you're aware, like, how cameras work, right? Yeah. So every camera is capable of taking full spectrum photos.
Oh, okay.
Right? So you can take pictures of things that we can't see with the naked eye.
Right.
But because these photos turn out very pink, you notice it if you watch any of our episodes, you know, that when we shoot in the full spectrum night vision, even during the day, some of our video is pink.
Right.
Because we're using full-spectrum cameras to pick up these other things we can't see. But that's why a lot of our episodes, some of the videos...
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
Okay? We're literally picking up those other spectrums. So all cameras have this little lens in there that blocks out the red light.
Huh. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So they you know, you have to have this lens inside these cameras that filters out the infrared light spectrum.
Okay.
So once you filter that out, you get what we normally see now. But it's interesting, you know, when we're looking at, you know, like, pictures like that, is maybe that these things are visible all the time, and we're just not seeing them because we're not taking pictures in the IR spectrum.
Right.
Or in this case, you know, if these things are interdimensional or something, we're not taking it on the other end of the spectrum. I had another thought too as well. You know, when these things are, like people talk about aliens and stuff coming in like their bedroom at night and stuff and walking into the room and stuff, you know, when you look at the visual light spectrum and the wavelength spectrum and that, you have the television radio waves at the bottom, and then it those are big looping waves of frequency.
Right.
And then at the top, when you have the X-rays and the radiation waves and stuff, it's very small, high-speed waves. Okay. So when you're inside of a building that's shielding you from these frequency waves and that, you don't get cell service, you don't get TV signal. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why you have radio or TV antennas on the outside of your house, right? Right. So these lower frequency waves can't pass through the stuff that we can see.
Okay.
Now, going backwards, things that are at a higher frequency, X-rays, gamma rays, radiation and stuff, can, you know, you can go to the doctor and get an X-ray.
Right.
That light, that frequency passes through your skin, down to your bone, and you can see what's inside. It passes through all those layers.
Right.
So if these interdimensional beings and stuff are coming from other levels, and they're passing in, they're at a higher vibrational frequency, they can pass through lower vibrational things, like walls, structures, stuff like that.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's really cool.
What do you think about that?
That's awesome. No, you know your shit, though.
My favorite thing to tell people is, I literally, when I started researching Bigfoot, like, I love cryptids. That's where my heart is.
Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah.
I started investigating Bigfoot and stuff with the great apes. And I thought very primitive, like, okay, if this thing is an animal, is it a primate? Is it a great ape? You know, and I worked from there.
Right.
That led me to be able to explain string theory and quantum mechanics. Literally, Bigfoot taught me quantum mechanics.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. It's so much intertwined and connected, and that the more you dig into this stuff, the more you learn. And, you know, if you investigate with an open mind and everything, and have that willingness to learn and you know, take it all in, you can learn a lot of stuff by just, you know, opening up to it.
Right.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
So we're almost at about an hour here, so I wanted to say, you know, thank you for coming on the podcast today.
Oh, yeah.
And for those of you, I don't know when this is going to air, but thanks for being on the episode with us, because we are shooting today for the UFO episode. Yes. And
it's an honor.
Thank you. Pleasure's mine, sir. You're definitely a wealth of knowledge, and I mean, your collection here, I mean, yes, we got a whole photo binder to go through and look at, and your books and stuff. I mean, it's going to be a cool day.
Yeah, it's going to be a long day.
Yeah. So I know you know, I found you online and stuff, but do you have a website where you share this on? You said you have a Facebook group. How can people get a hold of you?
I think Facebook is the way to go.
Yeah?
If you want to send them my link.
Yeah, tell everybody where you can find you.
Just look up Dustin Shuda on Facebook.
Yeah.
Or you can look up Dustin Shuda on YouTube, and you can find my two interviews that I did with Joanna Summerscales from the UK. We talked about these photographs, and she interviewed another guy, Bob Brown. He's another guy who's done a bunch of like the alien cons back in the early 80s and stuff like that. I started those. Anyways, yeah. I have videos on there, and
very cool.
Dustin Shuda.
You want to spell that for people listening?
Yeah, Dustin Shuda, Schutta.
Very good. Yeah. Not everyone watches, so they can't see it. I always like to put things in like that in there, like links and stuff. Make sure you spell it out, because people driving or listening, you know, it's a lot easier for them.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, cool. So. If whenever this episode airs on Whispers from the Dark, make sure you come back July of 2023. We should have the UFO episode of UFOs in Wisconsin out. So we're working on that right now. And you can see Dustin there, as well as all the rest of our stuff. And hopefully we see you out there in the field.
For sure.
Definitely. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Whispers from the Dark. To find out more about cryptids, anomalies, and the Paranormal Society, visit us at our website at wisconsincaps.com.
That's WisconsinCAPS.com. There you can find links to all of our social media, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and our Patreon. You will see links to our online store as well, where you can get t-shirts, DVDs, and more. If you click on the public events page, you can find out where you can meet us in person and all the public events we have coming up. If you enjoy our podcast or our YouTube shows, please consider becoming a Patreon at patreon.com/WisconsinCAPS. There you can find behind-the-scenes pictures and videos from all of our media, as well as bonus footage and evidence that we have collected. If you have encountered something you can't explain, we want to hear from you. Visit our website and click on Submit a Report on our main screen. You can choose to leave your contact information or simply remain anonymous. You can also reach us via email at wisconsincaps@gmail.com. If you would like to be a guest on our show, please contact us on our Whispers from the Dark podcast page on Facebook, or send us an email at wisconsincaps.com. Remember to like, share, and subscribe wherever you listen or watch or find us.